From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of December 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com. We'll turn our attention again to the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention, kind of an elevator pitch, but we'll talk with Wiffles Hybrids about their cooperation with an organization called Farm Rescue. I think you'll find that of interest, and then we'll turn our attention to the agricultural energies with Dan O'Brien at Kansas State University before we talk with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org, where all this year we've been celebrating 20 years of the Closing Market Report as a podcast and 40 years as a program.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.47.5. That was a half higher. The May futures at $4.55.5 a bushel, up a penny. And December futures at $4.65, a half cent higher. January soybeans down a penny and three quarters. Settlement price at $10.51.5. The March at $10.63.75. Down 1.25 cents. New crop November, 0.75 cents higher at $10.73. Bean meal up $2.50 at $3.01.10. The bean oil at $48.30, 25 cents lower. Wheat futures soft red at $5.17 in the March, a penny and a half higher. And the hard red winter at $5.28 for the March, up 6.75 cents. Live cattle futures $1.42.5 lower. Feeders off $1.50 for the day, and lean hogs up 62.5 cents for 100 pounds at $85.97.5. Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Naomi. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you. Happy New Year's as well.
Thank you. Same to you.
Let's talk about the marketplace. Give me your perception, kind of an overview. This is a little broader, but of the last year in the market, how you think it's been in comparison to what your expectations were going into the year, and if you have some outlook for the coming year. But let's start with this past year. How did things go throughout the season?
Well, I would say overall, I think a lot of folks had an opportunity for cash sales on that rally we had last winter. And then after that, I think the bigger surprising thing was that our summer high came in April, and then we never really got a summer high after that. I think that was the biggest shock for me for the grain markets is just that the seasonals maybe have shifted somewhat, and then that summer high maybe comes earlier. That could be in part because of the second crop corn in Brazil, the Safrina crop, and how that plays into the global scale. And then, of course, always over the marketplace, the continuing geopolitical changing patterns and tones, trades and tariffs, and how that affected the marketplace as well. So now as we wrap up this year, I think I'm also a little bit surprised that the corn market has been so subdued for 2 months with very, very little price action. Some of that maybe because of the government shutdown and not getting some of those reports and not getting some of those export sales. I love that soybeans had that rally into November and then that pullback lower that we were kind of looking for. But now we're at a pause point, looking to see if China's going to come in and buy some beans here, additional beans on this correction. And with wheat prices also now trying to find a bottom here, are we getting ripe to have that late, very, very late year-end rally into the new year? And if so, this is what farmers need to do, be ready to make some cash sales with it, because a lot of times that winter rally comes between mid-January and mid-February, and we'll see what the January WASD has to tell us and how that sets us up for 2026.
It will be the series of reports that's due out for the January USDA numbers. They include the crop report, the WASD, the grain stocks, and some plantings numbers for wheat. As you take a look at those, which one will set the tone? I suppose it would be the one that gives you the biggest surprise. but what are your expectations, I suppose?
Well, here's what we got to watch here. So with corn market, we know that the U.S. supplies probably in the big picture sufficient. It's just a matter if we can get that corn ending stock number under 2 billion bushels and by how much. And then from there, we're going to be keeping an eye on the global weather, specifically as it pertains to Brazil with their first and second crop corn, because global carryout has been trending lower for about the past 8 or 9 years. And so if there's an issue with the safrinha crop, or if we get a surprise bullish report from the USDA on the American side of things, that could be supportive for corn prices into the new year. The other thing we're going to want to be watching would be, of course, how the USDA, if they adjust demand for exports for soybeans, and do they increase demand for soybeans for crush, and ultimately what does that do to ending stocks here as well? And then again, we have to start watching weather in South America for their soybean production. And with wheat, I feel like we're going to see a bigger uptick in demand for U.S. wheat for export on that January 12th report. And that'll probably bring U.S. wheat ending stocks lower. But then you have to offset that with the balance and the reality that global wheat supplies are sufficient. So where I'm going with all of this is that, you know, I hate to kind of say it, but I think the reality is that it may be a struggle next year for corn futures to have a reason to get above 5, or soybean prices to have a reason to get above 12, or those wheat prices to have a reason to get above 6. It's going to take a major weather issue to get those things to happen. But what we also will want to be watching is how the Supreme Court reacts in response to the tariffs, and if they are legal or not. That's a huge piece of the puzzle going forward. And of course, we're looking for peace on earth, right, as we finish out this new year and head into the new year for 2026. And those global geopolitical ripples can have a black swan effect on markets and market prices at any time.
One last thing to ask you before I let you go. There will be a bridge payment that producers will get, probably about $50 an acre in Illinois for corn, $25 to $35 for soybeans. We really don't quite know what those are, but those are some pretty decent estimates from the FarmDoc team. Expectation is the producers will use that to keep grains and oilseeds in the bin, should they?
Well, here's the deal. You still have a business to run and you still have inventory to manage. And so the market opportunity isn't going to sit around and watch you with your bridge payment and what you do with it in your bank account. Market opportunities are separate of bridge payments. And so if the grain markets do have a reason to run higher into that January to February seasonal window of a rally, that still is going to be your cue to get current on cash sales, because that might be as good as it gets until we get some sort of a late spring or early summer rally instead.
Hey, thank you much, Naomi.
Thank you.
That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Robbie Meeker here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, taking place in the month of November. He is with Wiffles Hybrids. We'll probably talk some about corn.
Yep.
But let's first talk about your relationship with Farm Rescue, which is an organization that really helps producers who are in a bad way, that can't get in to plant or harvest or do other mid-season functions related to the production of agriculture.
Yeah, I think at Wiffles we really enjoy the opportunity to partner with growers, and anytime we have an opportunity to give back is an opportunity we want to take advantage of. And I think Farm Rescue offers that in a way for a very unconventional circumstance for growers that can arise. It's a way to just help out and help them survive whatever that challenge brings forth.
It's an interesting function because they bring the equipment with them to either plant or harvest.
Yeah, I know we had a neighbor here 2 falls ago. The father was killed in a farming accident right at the beginning of harvest. And I know Farm Rescue came in and helped the son out. And here, actually, it's been about 4 years ago. Here, 3 years later, he's maintained his family farm and been able to continue and grow that operation. So it's been fun for me able to see that local flavor from Central Illinois, be able to use Farm Rescue and maintain the life and the livingness of that family.
So clearly you are involved with the Farm Rescue side of this. How is it that
Wyffels helps to identify farmers? How is it that Wyffels is working with Farm Rescue over time?
Yeah, I think just being really connected in the field and connected with a lot of operations. If we have a customer, we have a neighbor, we have a friend that's in need, we're a liaison, I guess, to be able to connect them with Farm Rescue and just allow them to bring forth their services to help out families of need.
Thank you much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, Todd.
Bobby Meeker is with Wyffels. We're here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.
Let's check in on the agricultural energies market now with Dan O'Brien. He's at Kansas State University with Extension. Thank you, Dan, for being with us. Hope you're ready for the holidays.
Looking forward to it. It'll be great.
Let's get right down to it. Are ethanol plants profitable at this point?
Yes. Given the numbers out of a representative Iowa plant, it looks like the December break even, looking at the first 2 weeks of the month, about $1.49 per gallon of ethanol. The actual ethanol price is about $1.66. So, you know, it's about 17 cents profitability. And these numbers don't take into account what could be, what's anticipated to happen as we get past the first of the year to go into the, full usage of 45Z regulations, the potential for carbon capture, et cetera. So if we're showing profitability of 17 cents on a representative ethanol plant at this time, before a lot of these other revenue streams come in, then that'll be all that much more of a profitable situation, and really probably have longer term consequences on corn usage in the United States, profitability of corn usage as money gets passed on down to farmers and the crop mix. I understand it at Scott Irwin from their University of Illinois has been discussing some of the overall impacts. Todd, what was he saying at a recent conference that y'all had?
Sure. The Farm Assets Conference took place on the 12th of December, and some of that, only about 6 minutes of it, has aired thus far on the radio station. However, in the closing market report Friday, the whole 50 minutes will be there, everything that he actually said during his presentation. There wasn't a lot about the 45Z. Well, there was a lot about 45Z, but much of it focused on soybeans. That part which focused on ethanol was interesting. Scott had done the calculations, and he says he is 99.999% confident.
Pretty confident.
That beginning January 1st, that ethanol plants across the United States, just a plain old ethanol plant, will collect an 11 cent per gallon carbon sequestration investment, relatively speaking, or 45Z tax credit, just for being an ethanol plant. Now, if they happen to have a carbon pipeline or a way to sequester carbon, CCS, carbon capture and sequestration, then that number grows substantially. It's 94 cents per gallon, or about three times that, or nearly $3 a bushel that they buy in a tax credit. So I don't know whether you've been following up with some of the folks that you work with at NDSU. I know you do some monthly ag energy webinars with them on this issue. What are they telling you about the CCS and how that might change the landscape?
As of the first week of December, David Ripplinger, again, a bioenergy economics expert, a specialist up there at NDSU, indicated that his estimate was that there were about 24 plants in the U.S. that were located close enough to carbon pipelines, newly established carbon pipelines, that they would be able to benefit directly from this higher payment that you're talking about. Total numbers, again, pulling from Renewable Fuels Association information, about 201 plants. So you can see it looks like to me that this industry is probably in for some structural change with the strong profitability benefits of of ethanol plants located near pipelines. Either they grow those plants and expand their area, and sometimes at the expense of their competitors, or new pipelines come about and the field gets leveled all that much more as more plants have access. So as we sit here in late 2025, it looks like the ethanol industry, as we go on into 26, probably primed for some real change, some real structural adjustments, based on who has access to some of these higher revenue streams associated with carbon pipelines or not.
Yeah. So one other note that was made by Irwin during the presentation related to RINs, renewable identification numbers, and he noted that unlike biodiesel, where the tax credit and renewable identification number prices often offset each other and they won't capture as much of a tax benefit from 45Z, that there doesn't at least appear to be at this point anything that's an offset in ethanol. So it's kind of a direct economic benefit to the ethanol plants. It'll be interesting to see how that moves basis going forward and how profitable these plants continue to be, I guess.
Well, to me, you look at that corn supply demand balance sheet. If you have this profitability issue coming in affecting domestic processing of U.S. corn, that brings about DDG, and I'm assuming that'll bring more bushels in more corn bushels into bioenergy production. That'll affect the DDG market for livestock feeding and where that's located, particularly in a proximity of these most profitable plants, and probably puts us on a course for crowding out in competition with regard to whether U.S. corn will follow this profitability signal towards ethanol usage, or if we're able to keep up the pace of exports that we now have, much less livestock feeding. So interesting days ahead in 2026 for the corn and soybean markets, of course. And here these underlying demand issues are really subtle but yet powerful drivers.
It does sound like a powerful driver, though, as you will admit, I think it is constrained by total capacity.
Sure.
And we run, what, at 80-85% at this point? Is that correct?
85-90, yeah. It just depends which set of USDA ERS numbers you look at. But 85-90%, at least with the last quarterly report from the USDA and their energy monitoring groups.
The point is, don't get as excited as the numbers sound, because capacity isn't quite there at this point to make it move as fast as you might think it would. Hey, thank you much, Dan. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. Take care. Have a good Christmas.
You too. Dan O'Brien is with Kansas State University Extension. Joined us on this edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Make note that on Friday of this week, you'll hear all of Scott Irwin's presentation made at the Farm Assets Conference. And then all next week, we'll bring you Farm Assets Conference presentations from the full day's event. You'll want to make sure that you listen to those, or you'll find them online at willag.org. Let's take a look at the weather forecast now. Don Day is here. He is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Hope you are looking forward to a great set of holidays.
I am, and hope you are too.
I am indeed. I actually like it when it's warm and the snow is not around. Guess that's going to happen. But let's start, I think, in the Midwest, but we'll get to that in a moment. Let's start on the West Coast, where it just appears it's going to be a rough holiday week.
It will be. There's a very large, very moist storm system. It's a little bit of an odd weather pattern, quite frankly, but it's good news for California in the sense it's going to bring significant snow to the Sierra Nevada, which will help out California snowpack. And there is going to be 3, 4, 5, 6 inches of rain falling in some parts of California. And this is a statewide event. This rain is also going to spread into Nevada, parts of Arizona, Utah, and will be a real shot in the arm in terms of some really good moisture. It's been a while since that part of the world has gotten some good precipitation, and they're going to get one.
In the valley, will it provide helpful precipitation for crops that are grown there in California?
Yeah, the Central Valley is, some parts of the Central Valley are under a flood watch, so maybe too much of a good thing. But in terms of getting rain, getting that snow in the mountains for later use, this is going to be a really big storm for that.
So it is all about the snowpack. How about on the opposite side of the mountains, the eastern side, the side you're on? Do we have snowpack being generated there so far, and will that be helpful enough for the Plain States and parts of the Dakotas?
Well, it's really an interesting pattern, because along and west of the Continental Divide is where just about all the moisture will fall, and it's going to be kind of a feast or famine for some of the central and northern Rocky snowpack. Some will get some help, some others won't. And then you get east of the Continental Divide, out across the plains, through the Midwest, and then across the south and southeastern parts of the United States. This Pacific storm is just pumping very mild air out ahead of it. So this is going to lead to this very warm stretch of weather through the course of Christmas week. The exception is going to be the northeast. The far northeast part of the U.S. is going to have a white Christmas with some light snows in far northern areas of New England. Now, after Christmas weekend, in fact, as we get into Monday and Tuesday of next week, do expect a dip in temperatures. We're going to see a shot of Canadian air come in. So the week after Christmas is going to start off a lot colder for a lot of the Midwest and the Upper Plain states that are going to enjoy this thaw.
But it looks as if that doesn't last all that long. Is that right?
Maybe not. I will tell you this. What we're seeing on our weather charts is something that gives us extremely low confidence past 7 days, because I'll tell you this, we are going to see another really big buildup of extremely cold air in northwest Canada. Alaska is going to go through some severe cold, and we've got to keep an eye on that. That air mass can become unstable, and on a whim, the jet stream can decide to make a wiggle when we don't expect a wiggle. So we're confident to say that we've got some colder weather coming in early next week. But after that, let's take it one day at a time.
Hey, thanks much, Don. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Now, starting today, now through January the 5th, that's Monday, we will not have agricultural programming on our home station, with the exception of the Closing Market Report and our Commodity Week programs, so be aware of that. And even those programs will be pre-taped. They'll be from the Farm Assets Conference if you missed it and you'd like to hear it. Most of it should be airing on the radio stations you're listening to right now, and or you can find it all up online at willag.org. That's willag.org, or just look for the Closing Market Report in your favorite podcast application. You have a great winter break. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.